We shift now to our Vent Stay segment, your weekly chance to get your voice heard on items in the news. This week we'll be talking strictly in economic terms, overtime pay, and tipping for services, the topics on this week's Vent Stay. Here are the phone numbers. Here is the phone number, 800-838-3760 to get your calls in here. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So let's begin with the overtime pay part of this. If you're a salaried worker making between roughly $24,000 and $47,000 a year, you're getting a raise December 1st, or more time away from work. President Obama, after 2 years of research by the Labor Department, updated the overtime rule. The point is to give workers fair pay for a day's work, not take advantage of them by calling them salaried and then requiring lots of extra hours. This affects EAP employees, executive, administrative, and professional. 4.2 million people are likely affected, and employers can either pay time and a half to employees in the new bracket, raise their pay above that lower limit, or work them no more than 40 hours a week, or some combination. The bottom limit will rise every 3 years from now on. Here's Emily Curitan with the wording of our survey on the issue.
Hey, Jeff. Our survey, we tried to keep it pretty open-ended and straightforward this week. We asked people basically how much they work, how many hours a week, why they work so much if it was over 40, and how they get paid. One point would be, 4.2 million people could be affected by this overtime rule. Estimates I looked at, though, the vast majority of those, 3 out of 4, don't actually earn overtime currently. So unless it causes some great ripple effect reshuffling, we're probably not looking at as many people seeing more hours, more overtime hours.
Yeah, with 4.2 million, I think, affected, that's not nearly the whole population by a long shot. So this is Vent Stay on the Exchange. You can talk about the overtime rule, whether it affects you, if you've got other ideas for how you'd like to see overtime applied in our economy. 800-838-3760 by phone. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Item two is also about getting paid, but in tips. With minimum wage hikes happening or considered around the country, some restaurants have opted to change the way they pay their people. Instead of low wages all around, with servers making extra money in tips, the restaurants raised their prices and paid better wages. Ivar's in Seattle, for example, raised menu prices 21%. Since an initial flurry, though, some of the restaurants have backed off and returned to a system of low wages plus tips for servers. For one thing, when some restaurants allow tips and others do not, servers have shown a tendency to leave the ones that do not pay tips. Emily, what'd you find in our survey?
We just asked people, again, very open-ended, how do you feel about raising the base wage for restaurant servers and or prohibiting tips? Packed in there is, of course, a rise in menu prices or maybe a more equitable distribution of tips among the cook staff and other people in the restaurant. This is one I have found people certainly are colored by where they sit, whether they're dining, whether they're serving, whether they're back in the kitchen, or maybe they own the joint, seems to greatly color their perspective. We want to hear from everyone on this, whether you're a server, a restaurant owner, or just someone who dines out. Would you be willing to pay more and not have to calculate your tip at the end? This is Vent Stay on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Emily Curitan here with Jeffrey Riley. You can join us after a short break, 800-838-3760, or drop your comments off at our inbox, jx@jeffnet.org.
It's 8:36, and you're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Emily Curitan. This is our Vent Stay segment, your chance to vent politely on topics in the news. This week's topics are all economic. We're asking your thoughts about overtime pay and either how it affects your life or how it should affect your life if you don't get overtime and wish you did. Let's talk about the circumstances. Maybe you have a Johnny Paycheck, take this job and shove it kind of feeling about the way you've been dealt with pay-wise. Let's talk about overtime pay on this Vent Stay. Our other topic, economic as well, also about reimbursement or payment in the first place for your services, tipping for service, and whether you think it's a great idea, whether you'd like to see tipping go completely away and just pay more for what you get at restaurants and coffee bars and the like. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And I need to compliment you again, Emily, for coming up with the survey. So we actually get to walk into the room with a fair amount of comments in hand already from some of our listeners who've had a chance to see what we put out there.
Well, you're very welcome, Jeff. And that survey is still up on the Jefferson Exchange Facebook page. This week, we did have kind of a big ask for people in internet land, which was to click through more than one page in order to answer our survey. Not sure if it flew off incredibly well, but the lead question, again, was how much do you work per week? How many hours a week do you work? Is it 0 to 10, 21 to 39, 11 to 20, or more than 40? And the majority of people who answered the survey work more than 40 hours a week. If they click that, they go to a page that asks them, well, why do you work so much? Some of the responses we got are not terribly surprising, though they are a little bit depressing. Here's from Kay in Medford. Kay in Medford wrote us, I have one main job and a freelance job. I can't afford basic bills like rent, car insurance, phone, student loans, minimal groceries, and gas with my one job because it doesn't pay a living wage. I don't believe I get overtime. I'm pretty sure I just allowed to work flex hours or make accommodations for my second freelance job. So I think a lot of people are in that boat where maybe they don't make enough money at a full-time job to pay their way in the world.
Which is an ongoing concern. Is it kind of interesting? We sort of accidentally turned this into an economic hour and a half because we'll be talking about economics here. We're also going to be talking to Rana Faruhar in the next hour about makers and takers and the shift of American industry from making things to shuffling paper around to create wealth on paper for some people. Makers and Takers is the name of that book. But how has the whole system of compensation affected you over the years? Maybe you worked in a job once where you were getting hourly wages and got overtime when you worked past the 40-hour-a-week limit and then got turned into a supervisor. Your duties didn't necessarily change. It's happened to a lot of people, we find, over the years. Your duties didn't necessarily change other than you got the new supervisor tag slapped on you, and now you got basically paid the same, but you didn't get any more money because you didn't get overtime. You were exempt as a salaried worker.
Right. And this rule, this federal overtime rule, really is aimed at the lower tiers of white-collar salaried workers. So just to put it in perspective here, the threshold for receiving overtime as a salaried employee used to be about $24,000 a year. It's now closer to $48,000 a year. And it's estimated 4.2 million people could be affected, Jeff, but actually about only 1 to 2 million of those are cashing in on overtime hours as it stands. So a lot of people, yes, but overall about 1% of the American workforce, according to some reporting in the LA Times I was just reading.
So let's get your thoughts. Maybe you've had a job for many years where circumstances changed over the years. The ways in which you got paid were handled differently. In fact, come to think of it, I can remember a time when I got changed from a salary rate to an hourly rate, but they gave me guaranteed overtime in there too, just a sort of a way to keep the base rate low. I didn't quite understand the mechanics of it, but the paychecks weren't appreciably lower, so I went with that. But maybe you've been in a situation where something changed in your job status and you got paid on a somewhat different basis. Let's hear your thoughts on that. Let's hear your thoughts on tipping for service, when it's appropriate, if you'd like to make sure that it continues, if you think we should tip more than 15 or 20%, or if we should do away with tipping altogether. 800-838-3760 to comment by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jim in Grants Pass. Hi, Jim. Welcome to The Exchange on Vince Day.
Yeah, good morning. One thing, I'm 75 years old, but I remember a lot of times when I worked for and with people, spending that extra time on my own with potential customers, people, they would just automatically come to me when, you know, I was there. Should I be paid for just the incentive of, you understand what I'm saying?
I don't, no.
Yeah, just being out and among helps your, you know, customer base. And if that's taken away, because you're put the cold-heartedness that you're going to have to be paid for doing that, I don't think I'd be putting out the aura that people would come to me.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Jim. Appreciate that. Let's get your thoughts on how people are compensated for their pay in our culture. It's different things for different people. It's always been interesting to me to look particularly at when we talk about tipping in restaurants, that the folks in the front get the tips. The folks in the back, the cooks and the dishwashers, do not. Now, different systems in different restaurants, some places do share the tips around with everybody. Some places don't, but it's a kind of an up and down thing. And it's a lot to ask, I think, of someone in today's world to pay them fewer dollars than the minimum wage gets and then to make up the difference in tips.
Yeah, Jeff, both of these topics actually made me sort of meditate on some past personal experiences. I've worked in the service industry and then in another industry that's very much up in arms about the overtime change and the federal rule requiring overtime payment to salaried employees under $50,000 a year or so is the newspaper industry and journalism. And they're saying that's going to directly translate into less news, especially at community newspapers where people often do put in a lot of hours that are uncompensated. And I think maybe what Jim was talking about there is when you have a job, are you actually counting the hours if it's something that you really care about? And often salaried positions will be like that where people put more than can be measured, more than can be counted, and certainly more than a punch card would reflect into their jobs. In terms of tipping, we asked people about that on our survey. We got some interesting responses. Josephine in Ashland is a server. She wrote in, she doesn't feel great about raising the base wage for restaurant servers like her. She says, I'm a great server and I get great tips because of it. So that was a theme that echoed over and over both in our survey and in some sources I was looking at online is that somehow tips motivate better service or incentivize it and create the dynamic between the diner and the server. I thought that was interesting because I wonder, on the flip side, does that sort of pack a certain amount of like sexism into serving? All the isms, really, where you have, I mean, if I don't do my job good enough, I don't get paid is the dynamic that you're creating there. And I wonder if people experience the flip side where they're a great server so they get good tips, or maybe sometimes you just can't control how someone sees you and you don't get tipped at all and it was outside of your control and that must feel terrible.
I was surprised when I went out and did my usual routine of checking for the topic matter and looking for editorials on that to find people and not a few calling for banning tipping outright, just getting rid of the practice as being out of date. That includes the Financial Times in an editorial from last October saying the link between tips and good service is weak. It turns out that what serving staff receive reflects more the size of the bill and a sense of social obligation rather than an act of employee appraisal. Patrons shell out partly as a display of virtue and to satisfy a need to do their bit. And the Financial Times goes on to say this urge can be manipulated with embarrassing ease. Various studies find that tips increase when a waitress wears an ornament, learns cleverly how to touch the customer, or has the good fortune to be blonde.
Right.
Tipping encourages staff to seek out good tippers, not provide smooth service. So people weighing in against the idea of tipping in the first place, when you tip at a restaurant, if you tip, and if you don't, we want to hear from you too. Remember, it's all first names only. Nobody has to know who you are. But do you refuse to tip for some reason? Do you think that you should be paying enough through the rest of the bill to not have to worry about a tip? When you tip, how do you figure it out? Is it just as a portion of the bill? Is there a bare minimum you go by? Is it a couple of points for different kinds of service? Let's hear your approach to this. 800-838-3760, our phone number, email address jx@jeffnet.org, our other issue on the table. Also about pay, but about overtime pay and the new overtime rules and whether you're the kind of person who is going to be getting a benefit from this and can say, woohoo, at last, some overtime pay for all those extra hours I put in.
Or on the other hand, maybe your employer could respond by minimizing your hours and hiring a low-wage worker to take over your responsibilities. That's one thing that, for example, the National Retail Association has supposed might happen as a result of this rule. Jeff, I'm so curious to hear how people really feel about tipping. I would love to get some calls there. You know, how much do you tip? Does it put a sour note on the end of your meal whenever you've got to do a little bit of math? You know, can you digest and do math at the same time? I know. Is it 20%? As a server, you know, is this motivating for you or is it just another in a long series of minor humiliations surrounding your job? So much to talk about. And like you said, it's first names only, a safe place to be honest. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org.
I wonder, too, how many people would stay in the serving game if they didn't get tips, if they just got a minimum wage, because people can, you know, you can knock down $15 to $20 an hour for some people. As we hear from a number of different sources, that's not bad money or more per hour while you're bringing in good tips. And you'd be getting less than that if you got down to something more like a minimum wage for all. Your thoughts on tipping, your thoughts on overtime on this Vince Day on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Patrick in Ashland. Welcome to the Exchange on Vince Day.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I I think, you know, I've been in that industry periodically, and I think tipping is an antiquated concept. I think the employer should handle the cost. I think it's unfair. And as far as overtime, I again side with the employees. I think you know 40-hour a week, that's pretty respectable. You should have to pay overtime, depending on the, you know, not overall, like, it depends on the actual work, I think. But I mean, that's getting into the minutia of it. But I really would like to emphasize that tipping is completely antiquated, because you got people that just, there's a lot of curmudgeons out there. I've always overtipped, and I always feel weird about it, because I always go, man, like, that, like, because I've often overtipped when the service wasn't even good, and I just think, man, you know, so that should be you know, I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Thanks for that, Patrick. I appreciate it. It reminds me of a story that my mother told me when I was a kid, which was about the fact that tipping comes after the meal. And so there's really no way, other than through direct confrontation, to make it clear to the server you either really like what you're getting or that you really don't. Mm-hmm. The story she told was that she and a cousin went to go eat at some place, and they were so annoyed with the service that they each put down a nickel.
Oh, see, I overtip when I'm annoyed with the service.
Really?
I do the opposite. I'll leave, if you're really rude to me, I'll leave you a $100 bill.
Why?
Because I feel like you'll learn more from that scenario.
You have a $100 bill. I'm delivering things in the newsroom today.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yes, be as rude as you can if you want a crisp $100 left to sort of scold you for all time. I like Patrick, the overtipper there. That's an interesting and a very cultural phenomenon, because I, too, am an overtipper. And going to other countries actually had me thinking about this. We assume that restaurant jobs would become a minimum wage sector if we didn't tip, but what if they actually had more status and more of a hierarchy to the wage scale? Like say waiters in Paris, they make a good wage, and it's a rather enviable position to have in society, to work in a fancy restaurant.
Which leads to that great feature of Americans with Irish surnames trying to pronounce French and ask if the service is included in the bill. Service compris?
Yeah.
En le prix?
Oh, no. Let us not devolve into French on this Vince Day. Let's take a call, Jeff.
All right. Kat in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day. Kat, you there?
Hey, Pat?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. I have a couple thoughts on tipping. One of the things is I never understood how tipping got pushed up from 10 to 20%. And now with the bill, you often get the suggested amount that you should tip. And one of my thoughts is that all the people I've known who've worked in that industry failed to pay taxes on their total income, yet they expect the same services that the rest of us get who do pay taxes on our total income. And I have another thought, which is more kindly thought to the servers, but often they can't control the quality of the food they serve, and so if they serve something that is not up to the expectation of the diner, they're liable to get less of a tip. I really feel and would prefer that prices for food be raised, and in other services, like haircuts and things. If I go somewhere and I pay $30 for a haircut that takes a person 20 minutes, I don't feel I should have to tip on top of that.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts. I very much appreciate that, Pat. And I should bring up a couple of good points. Number one was the not declaring of tips, which has been an issue probably throughout taxation history, the idea that you have to declare your full income in tips versus you get to declare a portion. It's been different things in different places mm-hmm. over the years. The other one, she brings up a great point, which is we've been talking primarily about food servers, but forgetting about tips for hairdressers and other people, cab drivers, for example, other people that you'd give tips to in addition to people who deliver food to your table.
Well, and Jeff, I think they tend to be jobs where you know that person may not be benefiting from the entitlements of a salaried position, from, say, benefits or paying into a retirement fund. They are often the more standalone, every man for himself jobs out there, like serving or driving a cab. So for me, I think about that when I overtip my server. I think about their kids or back to school money or everything that you don't necessarily get when you are hoping for a big night in the restaurant. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. and you don't get paid whether or not you spent that time. Really interesting thoughts there, though, from Kat, and maybe a time for a few more here from our survey. This one comes from Nancy, who was... Actually, let's go to Joe in Reading. He's on Kat's page there. He said, excellent service should be the norm and not an exception to be rewarded. So he's in favor of eliminating tipping just to create an environment where people aren't necessarily striving. They're just doing their jobs well.
We have an email along that line from Becca in rural Lane County. She says, I'm never sure whether poor service is due to the server or something else like poor management or a kitchen problem. I always tip 20% or more if the server is really good. It is interesting. Pat brought that up, too, about the amount. It used to be 10%, then it was 15%. It was 15% through much of my early life, and then everybody started thinking 20% was about the right amount.
Well, and I wonder if servers were making $2.30 an hour back in your early life. I wouldn't be surprised if the wages had dropped as the tipping standard rose.
Well, since you mentioned it, yeah, the minimum wage in Connecticut that I was making as a cook at Pizza Hut was $2.30 an hour, and the servers were making $1.70.
I mean, when I worked as a server in Texas, the minimum wage law in that state did not apply to you if you were a restaurant server. So I made $2 an hour. I worked in a fancy Italian joint where I might pull in $300 in a night, or I might make $40 and get a bunch of fanny pats. You know, it wasn't, there was no guarantee. And
there was no base rate whatsoever?
Well, it was $2 an hour.
$2 an hour. $2
an hour. And, you know, on the other hand, the people in the kitchen had a base wage, but then they'd be bitter on those $300 nights because they didn't necessarily get cut into the tips unless the servers decided to be benevolent.
We've been talking about this from the perspective of people who pay the tips. It'd be great to hear from some people who receive the tips as well. I think we got a couple in the survey, but just to hear from people's stories about what did you have to do, did you feel like, to amp things up a bit, to be able to come out and I don't know, put on a show or something to get the best possible tip out of that. We'd love to hear from you on this Vince Day where we're talking about tips and overtime pay. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org.
Jeff, I'd also love to hear from people about their experiences dining or serving in other countries and what the cultural norms were there. I know in New York, for example, certain high-end Japanese and Asian cuisine restaurants have eliminated tipping and raised their menu prices to be more attuned with the culture that they're representing. In terms of culture of working in general, which is something we tried to tap into with our survey this week, we really wanted to know how much people work every week. How much do you work every week? Are you working more than 40 hours? And is it because you love your job or because you have to? That's what we were trying to ferret out. Here's one from Morgan in Gold Beach. Morgan wrote in that I work in youth programming, so aside from the 8 to 5 hours of planning and maintaining the organization, the activities and meetings with youth and parents all take place after 5 p.m. and on weekends. I do not get overtime or what I would consider to be a high wage. So Morgan says they're on a salary in Gold Beach and working a lot of overtime without pay. Starting December 1st, that won't be acceptable, according to the federal government.
You know, this also brings up, since he works in youth services, the idea of how teachers get paid as well. Now, they're not part of all this, but I know
they're
that,
not.
They're not. But I get the usual issue with teachers is a lot of people saying, well, they get 3 months off in the summer. I live in a neighborhood that's fairly teacher heavy, and they work really hard during the school year.
Oh, it's not a bunch of teachers just out lathering themselves in coconut oil all summer.
Well, in the summertime it may be that, but I'll tell you something. During the rest of the year, they really are working hard because I know, as a matter of course, the teachers in the neighborhood are always going off to their schoolrooms to set some things up for the next day on Saturday or Sunday.
Those uncompensated hours.
There's time on the weekend. Mm-hmm. There's time correcting papers in the evening, all kinds of stuff going on. Another call from Nicole in Ashland on tipping. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say quickly that I will not tip if I have terrible service, period. But if I have great service, I'll tip over 20%. So.
Is 20% usually your base rate, and you'll just sort of add to that if
yes,
that's a little better?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, but there have been times you've left no tip whatsoever?
No, if I've been kept waiting for a long time, and I think sometimes it's because I don't look like I would be a big tipper, but I'm not sure. So, anyway.
All right, thanks for that, Nicole. Appreciate that. How does one communicate that we don't appreciate the service right now, other than to leave a lousy tip later?
Well, and to make what you're willing to pay for your meal totally dependent on the yeah, it's an interesting the dining experience, as we were talking about.
You said no French.
I said no French, but I lied. You know, what are your expectations when you come into a restaurant? What are your expectations around work in general is what we're talking about this Fence Day. I was surprised to learn, Jeff, that on the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development's metric of what are the hardest working or the most working countries in the world, that's the number of hours a worker puts in per year. Mm-hmm. Mexico came in number one, and the United States came in at 17, which surprised me. We think of Americans working a lot, but we've got 16 countries ahead of us.
Huh, productive maybe, but not many hours. Vince and Eugene, final call on this Vince Day. Welcome to the Exchange.
Yes, I had two interesting, funny things happen to me related to tips. I'm originally from New York City. I went back to visit and met with a friend and had a poorly served meal, and we decided to only leave 10%. And when we were leaving the restaurant, the waitress actually followed us out the door and berated us for cheating her out of her 20% tip.
Oh, boy. And what was the other
one? And then in England, I was visiting friends, and being from America, we always leave a tip, or usually do. We were in a restaurant in their hometown, and I left some change on the table as part of the tip. And the waitress came running out and said, "Oh, sir, you left your change on the table." And I said, "No, that's the tip." She said, "Really? Nobody else ever tips in this town."
Wow, that's an amazing story. Thanks for that, Vince. Appreciate that. I want to appreciate all the other input. Apologies to the person who just called in. We are out of time.
We sure are. It's the end of Vince Day. Thank you for participating. I'm Emily Curitan.
I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.